It's a little bit old idea concerning boundaries in field theory. I mean that the main papers were written by Witten, Lee, and Shetashvili around 8 years ago. And nowadays, some interest to this approach is due to Taheran condensation, and it seems that to address some problems in the phenomenon of Taheran condensation, boundary string field theory is rather useful. I mean that it at least give us the form of the potential that agrees with Ashok-Sen conjectures about Taheran condensation. And also it's easy to find the potential. The key papers at this point are due to Gerasimov, Sugashvili, Kutasov, Marino, and many others. Okay, and supersymmetric boundary string field theory, in fact, is not well understood because it's understood only in the Navier-Schwarz sector. It's not clear what to do with the Ramon sector. Because in some sense the generalization to the Navier-Schwarz sector is straightforward. Just use the superfield formalism and then assume that matter and ghost sectors decouple. It was done in recent papers by Marino and others. And there are also interesting papers about the D-bar system. Trying to use supersymmetric boundary string field theory, or in other words, the old sigma model approach to string theory. It's due to Kraus, Larsen, Tukaranagi, and others. Okay, what I'm going to discuss is first to give a brief review of boundary string field theory, mainly due to Wittenberg. And I will make some comments there due to my work, and then I will comment boundary string field theory and Taheran condensation in the bosonicals, mainly follow my papers. And then finally I will briefly discuss and also make a comment concerning the simplest case to consider in the supersymmetric case. I mean G9 Gehlen in type 2A. And I will conclude with some open problems. So, the written ideas was to start with sigma model formulation and then to consider space of all two-dimensional field series, and in fact is to try to define a Lagrangian on that space. And he used the Batalin-Wilkowitzky formalism, and the main equation in this formalism is the master equation, and Witten proposed a solution to this equation. Namely, let us take the two-dimensional world sheet, which is a unit disk in the complex plane whose coordinates are z bar, and then take the standard action for the bar path, this one, X is the meta field and BC and et cetera are the bursts. But Dipton proposed to consider non-trivial boundary interactions like this. Then the claim is that the solution of the master equation is given by this formula, where Q is the velocity operator. And operator O is defined through the operator V in the following way. Okay, but it was stressed already by Witten, and then I think it was a nice paper by Lee and Witten, that the right-hand side, it's clear, is defined in terms of two-dimensional field theory. And this two-dimensional field theory have divergences. It's the main point. So in some sense, it looks like a formal definition of the action. It's in fact the main message I want to stress. Okay, so it seems from the mathematical point of view rather problematic to give a well-defined notion of the effective action.
Oh, am I going to get, so DO means derivative with respect?
D?
Yeah.
Okay, in fact it means that it's a differential with some coupling constant for this operator, because you can consider it with respect. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, it's okay, it's another problem that also relates with divergences, namely how many renormalizable boundary interactions we can introduce.
So, is DS is the one form defined on the manifold of the coupling constant?
This one?
DS.
Oh, DS, all right. Okay, now to compute something explicitly. It seems the most natural way to assume that the boundary interaction looks like this one. Because in this case, it's clear that the path integral becomes Gaussian, so we can do a lot. Okay, let me give you an example. And first, note that this boundary interaction corresponds to the open string Tachyon field with the quadratic profile. And A, in fact, is a x-independent path in the Tachyon field, the ground field. Okay, and now it's rather simple stuff to compute the partition function for such a boundary interaction. It's found from this equation. And point that now you can immediately realize that on the right-hand side, there is a propagator at coinciding point that, of course, is divergent. And it's question what to do with this. And written definition was this one. Okay. It immediately gives you from this equation that solution looks like this one. Note that I use matrix notation here. So T means matrix. And here, place it also in sense of matrix notation. And gamma here is the Euler constant. Okay, now it's rather simple to solve of the equation for the effective action, and solution is given by this formula. And it's interesting that it was stressed by Shatashvili that this written solution can be rewritten in terms of renormalization group, two-dimensional renormalization group beta function. In this way. And you see difference between partition function of the string sigma model and effective action is due to this term, this beta function.
Remind me how you see that in general?
No. No. Satas really tried to do. You remember that here we have arbitrary. If we have arbitrary interaction with some coupling constant, try to do a standard perturbation theory in this coupling constant. And bit, of course, beta function is known near a fixed point. So in perturbation theory. Moment. In perturbation theory, you can prove it, I think, up to the second order, to coupling constant. But in this example, it's exact. It's exact, because it's rather simple to compute the exact beta functions and use this to compare with the Gutmann answer. It's coincide.
Could you write down the formulas for the exact question?
Hmm?
You write down the beta functions.
Okay. Okay, what's fair if you know, or if you want now?
If those two formulas are equal, then he's written them down.
Now it looks like, okay, up to some beta A is proportional A. Plus trace T on beta and to be more precise, plant means the normalized field.
So this has nothing to do with performing the Gaussian transformation in the standard relation between the generating function and the effective action? Because it's not related to any of the operations. Why do you think that if you compute this amplitude like that, I would be computing generating function of S matrices?
I understand, but
so then action would be obtained.
No, it's a little here. It's a little bit tricky. We are thinking in terms of target space,
yes.
But here it's in terms of world shifts.
Can I understand the generating function of three-level?
No, but here it's three-level action. So from this point of view, it makes a little sense to do Lagrange transformation on that stuff. It's three-level action.
It's just one PI diagram, so mm-hmm. You compute the effect action directly, don't you?
Well, but Z contains one particular reducible one from the point of view of
It's three-level distinction.
No, we don't have to do anything.
In the super same case, you have S equals Z. So, you know, your argument would break any way in the super.
Yeah, so I want to understand why. Because naively, I think Z would be computing, including all the one particle reducible diagram as well as reducible diagram. So, would contain reducible diagram as well as irreducible. So well, I think somehow removing diagram.
I see a point. Point usually is that if you're trying to compute Z, you found divergences. And in some sense, some of them are responsible for exchange diagram. So if you subtract these divergences, you automatically remove exchange diagram, you will get only contact terms in effective action.
We normalize D has no one partial reducible diagram, is that okay?
In, from a two-dimensional point of view, what you are saying is translates in the language of divergences. So in fact, Z of course doesn't reproduce effective action. But if you renormalize it, it's another point that here A and T should be a normalized coupling, not as S bar coupling here. It's in regularization as written list, it's a little bit confusing. But I will show later that you are right that the point in this. We define bundle interaction in terms of the bar couplings, but action should depends on the normalized coupling. That's a point.
So when you write that equation, A prime and T prime are
normalized. Normalized, exactly.
Here
this normalization is disguised in this formula, no parameter, and I will show you later that how to introduce
this parameter. Age, everything should be prime.
Right. No. Here not, but after this, here of course, should, it's right. Okay, and it means that from the point of view target space, the action looks like this one, where T means the Taheron field, and T25 is D25 tension. This normalization was, in fact, written equation, of course, is defined up to normalization. It's a point. And then Ashok Sen and I think Goshal showed that the right normalization is T25 brain tension. Okay, then it's from this, it's rather simple to find potential. And potential looks like this one. I want to stress a point here that from boundary string field theory, normalization group gives us the flow that goes from zero to plus infinity. So here there is no problem why Taheron rolls to the right or Taheron rolls to the left. In boundary string field theory, Taheron rolls to the right. Okay, and crucial observation is that difference between two extrema is exactly one. So in this normalization, it's in agreement with some conjectures concerning Taheron condensation.
So I don't understand the comment you made about the direction of the flow. I think the those are often referred in the way of the positional time dependence of T rather than the renormalization group flow direction of renormalization group flow.
No. In fact, we are starting from the ultraviolet fixed point at if the boundary interaction is zero, and then. Due to the normalization group flow, we are going to the infrared fixed point.
What if you start just to the left of the bump? What if you start just to the left? If you start just off the.
From beta function, okay, let me more process. We have a flow that looks like I have a T for if it's scale at some constant T, then all that start going from T equals zero or R equals zero I scale to R to infinity. And T zero is positive.
Can
you remind me,
is T
correspond
to mass square of X?
Hmm?
T
was
a question of X square.
Mm-hmm.
So if
it's
starts with negative T, then you have
vacuum in the world. No, it's already Taheron field. Then the integral is divergent. It's there are some integral.
Yeah, so the stable Walsh theory exists only for positive.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can't really make sense of
it. So what it means is that the ultraviolet, I see, so it belongs to the T-coil vacuum.
But D was a constant in the action, right? That is
the moment. Here, T. T in some sense means a renormalized field. but I am starting from bar t that related with normalized t with time some two-dimensional scale. It's radio of disk. I can introduce radio of disk and consider it as a scale. And then from a target space point of view, Tachyon field should be massless with respect to two dimensions, right?
But from a wall field viewpoint, mm-hmm. that's the constant added to the action, right?
Mm-hmm.
The constant added.
Well, that will be negative. It's the coefficient of the x squared here.
No, that will be the condensation into the lower dimensional solidon. I mean, if you want to condense to the vacuum, that's the constant added in the action.
Yeah, but little t was the coefficient of the x squared here.
Right.
Yeah, and we say that little t has to be positive because the coefficient of the x squared term has to be positive.
Yeah, that's fine, but for condensation into the vacuum, you don't even need to switch on that term. Right? You just switch on a constant term in the action. You mean A?
A. Yeah. No, it's it will be a little bit confusing in some sense because then of course A, you can say that A is arbitrary.
Right, and A could go.
Okay, moment, but as far as I include A and T, I can show you that A and T goes from 0 to plus infinity.
So in some sense, if you understand correctly, your big T here, your tachyon,
mm-hmm.
that's what you're saying, in fact, that I can represent that as just little a.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, right.
The formula of mm-hmm. t is equal to a. T plus little t times x squared.
Right,
but to see this behavior, all I need is the a.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, it's a constant part of the Tachyon field.
That's
so
right.
To see potential, you at least should include a.
But so what's wrong with going to negative t using a?
If you use only A, then it's a priori, it's not clear whether A may be negative or positive. A is arbitrary.
Yeah.
Then it's all that it's okay. But as far as you include T, you have two parameters. Point that's...
just saying if you consider a quadratic perturbation mm-hmm. X for the tachyon, then you're always going to have something positive. But certainly if you consider anything that's odd in X,
mm-hmm.
or...
But even if you don't, you can have a positive little t and a negative a.
Or if you have a negative a, you would think you could go in this other direction.
So. I understand, maybe I'm mistaken, but I think mm-hmm. if you draw a diagram for a, you have a both direction. Minimization group goes in both directions. In both directions, because it's just interdimensional analysis, right? A,
not
which corresponds to...
Moment, not such simple.
Continue.
Okay.
So, boundary interactions, so S is equal to the integral of A, mm-hmm. so A has to have a dimension of mass. So as you throw it, A increases. So if A was positive, mm-hmm. it goes to A to infinity, so that compresses the existence of the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why vacuum condensation renews all the string state. Basically, that A ignores the minimization group. So then, if A is negative, the root of L also increases A, but in the wrong way, that it actually enhances the contribution from boundary rather than suppressing the boundary. So from this picture, it looks like the effect of going this way would be that the effect of creating hole become infinite, that the amplitude of creating single hole becomes infinite rather than depth.
Right. Yeah. It certainly looks like you could go that way.
Yeah. So if you go to the correct direction, then the open string disappear. If you go to the wrong direction, then the whole dominates the amplitude. Isn't that be the picture?
In other words, the beta function changes sign if t changes if a changes sign from positive or negative. So if you start with a, which is negative, or the you will flow to minus infinity in the
moment. Normalization flow I consider is going from ultraviolet to infrared. Because
it could be going
back. Yeah, but for A, I was saying that mm-hmm. going to infrared is in both directions. Starting from the origin.
For A. Okay. Okay, let me write some results. Okay, for A, equation is looks like A prime.
Then you don't need to take it anymore.
And then what I consider that we are going from R. Then it's clear that from this formula that Q prime going from 0 to plus infinity, and then problem what's going on with A, and I think that it's can be found from this, and as I remember from this point of A also should go like plus. Okay, maybe I'm wrong, but I can check.
Well, if you look at the beta function you wrote down for A, you set t equals 0.
No, I give you a normalization, a solution of the normalization loop equation.
Right.
You
set t equals 0 there.
Yeah, okay, you can set t equals 0, and there's a solution that either goes to A equals plus infinity or minus infinity.
Yeah, depending
whether
A is positive or negative.
Right.
No, in fact...
You don't have to go to plus infinity, A can go to minus.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I see. No, of course, it depends if A is positive.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that's no problem. Okay. So what I want to do next is let me modify all this consideration in the following sense. It seems natural to include other open string modes, and it's natural to consider first the gauge field, it's clear. And of course, there is a big problem with massive open string modes because boundary interactions are unanalyzable in that case. So I don't know exactly what to do with them. And next step, let me consider much more precisely the normalization, how it goes in this model, and I will also comment about this. And finally, in Bozzoni case, I want to discuss a normalizable boundary interaction that leads to a puzzle with boundary string field theory. In some sense, that and that's as given by Shetashvili doesn't reproduce the correct extremas.
Excuse me. I'm always puzzled by this claim that they are not renormalizable. If you add the correct factor e to ikx to the vertex operators that puts the field close to the on shell, right? It has the same mass dimension on the worksheet like the massless states, which have no dependence on x, right? So, you know.
No, but I think that all time was known that massive open string modes from the point of view of the sigma model correspond to unknown randomizable interaction. It's rather simple to see.
You can't
find
the anomalous dimension against the classical dimension.
You want to do OPDs, you want to do it non-perturbative on the world sheet, because you just want to do perturbation theory, beta functions and naive calculations.
The only subtlety that process involves is scalative with negative method, because you have to have a time-like momentum in order to make the massive string more possible. So that would involve the minimum conformatives, and that could be a subtlety.
But it should be possible. It makes sense. I mean, for the closed string, that's hard to do because you don't know how to do OPEs
when your bulk is curved, but your target space is nonlinear. But if you just put it on the boundary, then you still have, then you have your bulk of PDEs with your free theory. So I would think it should be possible to do that.
I mean, it's something general that has been taught by Kapustin about these problems in DSFT, and he also argued that the space-time action is not well defined, and used some classical configuration of the DSFT that, in my opinion, has infinite classical action, which is divergent, because the profiles of the fields are infinitely far from one shell, right? And then he was surprised that he got divergent results in the BSFT. But isn't it, if you're close enough to the one shell to solve the equations of motion, you should add the classical dimensions and quantum dimensions, and then there is no difference of the renormalizable.
I don't know.
So you're basically saying rather than just considering all backgrounds, you just consider on-shell backgrounds and then your range should be more
open. There's some perturbation there.
But that sort of proves the whole point of string field theory, which I have not so much question the theory, right? So the point is to be able to preserve Lorentz invariants and have no E by Kx and explore the action.
Right.
And you can't do that and stay close to on-shell if the mode has strings going on.
Generalize that stuff to the case when there is a boundary interaction that includes the gauge field. It's rather simple. One has to add the standard term, and F is a constant field strength for the gauge field. And all points that all computation straightforward give you answer for, suppose for the partition function, and then for the action. The only point I want to stress here, it's rather interesting. When that it's in the process of computation appears matrix, this one, U, that depends both on the gauge field and on the Tachyon field. And it's rather amusing that the final answer depends only on A and U. So in some sense, the gauge field is absorbed into the Tachyon field in this way. So it's rather interesting observation, because it means that in some sense, boundary string field theory knows about right physical degrees of freedom. I mean the Tachyon field. So point that we are starting from Tachyon fields A and T, and then at the gauge field F. And the final answer looks like that gauge field became irrelevant. Yeah. So the only physical degree of freedom is the Tachyon field. I think that Ashok Sen also wrote some remarks about this idea in his papers, that near the Tachyon vacuum, gauge field in some sense produces redundant degeneracy. But if we change coordinate to the right ones, then no, this degeneracy.
This is a schematic picture, because the gauge field has many components,
but here it's also matrix. It's matrix notation.
So it's a constant gauge field. So
of course, constant. No, otherwise the integral is not Gauss.
Oh, sorry. No, it's not.
It's constant. T constant and F constant. But point here, okay, let me say, point here that in terms of bar couplings, it's not clear how F can be absorbed into T. But it's again, it's a little caveat here. Here it's true only for the renormalized field. If we make renormalization, that some terms that don't have such dependence are gone. So we have, in terms of a normalized coupling, only such a simple dependence.
Mm-hmm. You're just turning on a constant field strength in some FIJs or some pair of directions. I mean, doesn't that break Lorentz invariant?
No, but it's in this, it's in some sense, it's a Taffian profile.
What the actual
But D is a symmetric matrix, right? And F is an anti-symmetric matrix. Mm-hmm. So can you replace one of by the other?
This? No, it's only in the process of computation. I found this.
But it's not really that F is gone, because F, as Lubov said, U is, has both a symmetric and an anti-symmetric part.
Right, you're right, you're right.
F is still there, it's the anti-symmetric.
You're right. From this point of view.
That's just a trick.
Mm-hmm. Are you trying to argue here that the states disappear at the end of the Taffian condensation, or what are you trying to argue?
I'm trying to argue that for the process of phenomenon of Taffian condensation, the physical degree of freedom is a Taffian field, rather than a Gauge field.
So you only have to check relevant operators, and that's why you just check one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me now show you about what's going with more careful normalization procedure. So to do this, you see, I modify the written procedure by making the explicit regularization of two-dimensional propagator. I add a small parameter epsilon here with this factor to regularize the ultraviolet divergences. And then my idea is to see what's going on with epsilon. And epsilon is a small parameter, and in fact is a ratio of short distance cutoff and scale in two-dimensional fields here. So then it's rather natural to see what's happened if I will play this game, and namely I will rescale epsilon with some constant parameter lambda. And then the answer is that, for example, partition function is modified in the following sense, that now a factor in front of this term is not more the Euler constant, but an arbitrary constant C. So it means that, as I said earlier, that if Z is ambiguous, then it automatically means that the effective action is ambiguous. So it means that this, as I said before, effective action is not well defined from the mathematical point of view. It's two-dimensional path integral is not well defined as far as the divergences. And the question here is what to do with this. Of course, a natural suggestion is to redefine A in the following way to get again the Euler constant. But of course, as A in some sense decouples on T, one can do much more complicated definition, and then it's kill this term or this term, it depends on you. So here it seems problematic to define the notion of action from this point of view. But I should stress two points, that the relation, the distant relation between deep brain tensions doesn't depend on this C. It's rather simple to check explicitly. It's first, and the second is that T is responsible for the kinetic terms and all other in the effective action. Because to find the potential, we in fact need only A. So it seems that the potential is universal from this point of view. We can play with high derivatives terms, and we from this point of view, it seems problematic to find the right mass for open string tachyon. But the potential is universal. It's rather difficult to do something with two-dimensional field theory to change this coefficient theory and explore. So my opinion that we can trust the potential in this framework. Okay, and here it's another point. Let me see what happens near a fixed point. Near a fixed point where beta vanishes, the usual belief is that effective action coincides with the partition function. Okay, but the question here is whether the partition function reproduces effective action that one can derive starting from the on shell string amplitudes. A priori, it's not evident. Okay, and to see what's going on, let me restrict to more simple profile. I add only A as the boundary interaction and F. And then partition function is given by this formula. And here we have a coefficient alpha that is divergent. It looks like this one. It was done by Fratkin and Zeitlin that the zeta function regularization leads to this. So we have the Born infill factor. It's well known. Okay, now let me use more complicated regularization. I introduce explicitly epsilon parameter here, and then answers this one. As far as one uses the minimal subtraction like this and prime mean renormalized field, the answer is again Born infill action, because you see a point here that this regularization gives the same answer for a finite part as the zeta function regularization. But if I will try to define epsilon in this way, alpha is modified to this. And so the minimal subtraction gives us not the Born infill factor, but arbitrary power. In the case of interest, it's 3 over 2. So the Born infill action from the point of view of a string sigma model is rather tricky.
Excuse me, is this a definition more natural than the previous normalization?
This one?
This epsilon goes to epsilon plus epsilon squared.
Ah, this one. No, if I want to change the finite part here, right, and if I have a power like divergences, I have to use this rescaling. Then the second term, this give me will change me the finite part, right?
So it's just a field redefinition, or?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Here.
Is that a field redefinition of the Bornier field action?
No, it's not field redefinition. I found that different power. Born infinite square root, but okay. Here it's power 3 over 2.
You're saying there's no, say, field redefinition where you absorb that in A or something?
Mm-hmm. No, no, of course, point that now I can modify this. I mean, here it's the minimal subtraction, right? And I add some finite part, then give me the correct
right.
Power.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. Of course, of course, of course. Okay. But from the point, no, I want to state here that from the point of view dimensional field theory, a priori is not clear what power should be. Mm-hmm. 1/2 or arbitrary number.
So this new epsilon that you redefined is the correct one and the previous one is wrong. If you open, for instance, Job's book chapter 1 and you study the zero energies of oscillate, you know,
mm-hmm.
oscillators,
mm-hmm.
you can calculate them via zeta function regularization to get the sum of integers is -1/12.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also use this cutoff
mm-hmm.
procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And you will get also 1/ε²
mm-hmm.
-1/12.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you redefine your epsilon, you will get a different result for the finite term. But there
mm-hmm.
is one privileged normalization, and this is the normalization that Joe uses, that gives you the correct gives you the correct result -1/12, and then the epsilon can
mm-hmm.
be interpreted as some infinite cosmological constant that subtracts the vacuum energy in some way because it's extensive in the volume of the worksheet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But any other redefinition of epsilon would lead to a wrong result and also
not wrong from the point of view two dimensional strings field theory is not unsurprising because if one is doing the normalization group, you should define the normalization conditions. And you see here no normalization conditions. So it's not surprising that different
terms. This diverging term is to add specific counter term.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the vacuum energy,
mm-hmm.
is the cosmological constant, and this counter term is able to cancel 1/ε only if you define it in the first way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it seems that only one of the choices of epsilon must be correct and the other must be wrong.
Okay, from again from two-dimensional field theory point of view, it's not clear which one is correct. Okay, and now what to do with this? We can.
I think that can't be true that it's not clear. I mean, in the example of Lubushka, you know how to calculate the central charge of a single free field. That's not a regularization dependent.
Here,
make it look regularization dependent. That's one way of calculating it.
No. Here, the problem here is that it's power like divergence.
It just means that the way you're choosing to define things is makes it look subtle, but there must be a more physical definition where there is no ambiguity. Just this for the center of the chart.
Okay, but then what to do with the normalization group? You can compute doing a normalization group using the different scheme, and you found the absolutely different answers. And then how to compare them? You should somehow introduce the normalization conditions.
You should compute some physical quantity.
Mm-hmm.
When normalized action looks different in different normalization schemes.
That's right.
Okay.
Right, we're equivalently if you make arbitrary field reader.
Yeah. It's also clear from the structure, right? As long as you have a to the minus a, you can always add, I mean, put in some factors of determinant of one the same into a.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
you'll change that part.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the field definition of a.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it means that it's the subtraction scheme becomes non-minimal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in a sense, that's just an artifact here of the fact that you're taking F as a constant and A as a constant. And
okay, we will see later. No. So, okay, to fix the problem, let me use this as a normalization condition of two-dimensional field theory. By definition, that means that partition function or effective action near the standard perturbative vacua coincide with effective action that one reproduces from the string on shell amplitudes. If I say so, that it means that I should reproduce this structure in F, right? And then it gives me the result that subtraction that that is consistent with this condition should be like this one, and its answer is Bernoulli reduction then.
So why does it have to reproduce? Oh, it has to reproduce this?
This term. And then...
Why do you know it has to reproduce?
From string amplitudes. I can compute for point amplitudes for the gauge field.
But you could do a field redefinition and get something of a different...
No, if S matrix...
It's a field redefinition invariant structure.
So what I want just say is that Born-Infill action, as it derived from the partition function, is not as natural as people believe. Okay, and now let me see what happened if I want to compute the leading derivation correction to Born-Infill action. Then it's known that zeta function regularization with minimal subtraction fails at that order, and it means that the partition function doesn't reproduce correctly the four-point functions for gauge fields. Renormalization condition now looks like this one. And then the perturbation theory allows to fix only two coefficients in the leading derivative corrections to the Born-Infill action.
These are alpha prime corrections.
That's right.
But they vanish for constant field strength.
Mm-hmm, right.
Okay, but that's all one really means by Born-Infill action anyway, is the action with constant field strength. Mm-hmm. You know that they're alpha prime corrections.
Of course, and now I am saying how to derive them.
Okay.
I'm saying that to derive the alpha prime corrections in within the partition function, we should use perturbation theory plus this as the normalization conditions.
Understanding that. Are you really using perturbation theory?
Right.
You're not just matching, not just writing down an effective action.
No. Point that gamma here includes all powers of F. It looks like 1 over 1 plus F.
Mm-hmm. And that you find from
And then, in fact, I fix from the normalization condition the leading only terms that include quartic enough. But it allows me to fix, you see, all this dependence on it. But it's true only for the bosonic case. In the supersymmetric case, these coefficients are zero. No problem with that. But it was a problem with the bosonic sigma model, how to find at least some non-trivial the rate of corrections to the Brownian field action.
And C1 and C2 you...
It's arbitrary because it's off-shell. We see points that as far as I use this as from on-shell string amplitudes. It can fix me only on-shell structures, and this is off-shell.
Of course, you can always absorb into field readers. Those can't be.
Okay. And next, let me consider another special boundary interaction that looks like the pack on the ground, but a little bit tricky. I add B and D here. And you see points that it corresponds that I add to the boundary term in Lagrangian, term that looks like K, K means geodesic curvature, times field phi. And as the curvature on the disk is zero, in fact, phi means a dilaton background. And it's okay, it's renormalizable, and we can compute.
Wait, how do you see this as adding curvature? Or adding a term proportional to the curvature? This, D is derivative.
And then, of course, it's rather simple to compute the partition function and the action if phi is again has a Gaussian profile, I mean x, and here b constant quantity.
I'm sorry, I'm being stupid. What is the difference between a and b? R is just constant, right?
R constant and B also constant. Difference that here B is dimensionless as A is dimensionful.
Why don't you treat R A plus B as a single quantity?
Right. A plus B, but they have
R
different...
R
A. Okay, yeah, meaning that that there is a mixing between dilaton and tachyon from this point of view, but okay, you can set the tachyon background zero and considering this one.
Why do you call it dilaton? Dilaton should have action proportional to the dimensional curvature.
Okay, curvature disappeared on the disk. At zero.
So it means
so it doubles to the river density, and the river density has a string, which is the sense of curvature boundary.
So are we talking about the closed string dilaton? That's really not in this open string action. What dilaton are we talking about here? So why is that appear in the open string action?
Because it couples to the other constant.
And why do they field in the, I mean, T was an open string tachyon. Phi is supposed to be a closed string field. What's it doing in the open string action?
Yeah, why are you using the open string action to define? Well, action for closed string field.
Right.
But from the we see from the beginning point of view was considered to all possible boundary interactions.
I know those are
this is a moment. This is boundary interaction.
They can absorb into T, as everyone does.
Not so simple because T is dimensionful and fire.
Perhaps I'm being prejudiced by your use of the name dilaton, which is usually
okay.
Closed string field. Okay, if it's the same one, then it does not appear in the boundary string action. Damn it, it's a closed string field.
Okay.
If it's some other scalar field in the open, which is an open string field, then okay, but let's not call it the dilaton.
Okay, let us scalar field phi. Okay, and then point that it's rather simple, it's clear to generalize computations to include this felt file. And problem appears on the level of the potential, because potential for this field looks like a simple exponent. So there's only one extrema as phi goes to plus infinity instead of two extrema. No extrema at phi minus infinity. Potential. It's clear because beta function for this field looks like zero for constant phi, while in the tachyon case it looks like tachyon field plus derivative correction. So in the tachyon field, this beta function term in effective action, in fact, bent the potential this way. But now potential is free exponent. So there is a problem with boundary strength field theory, how to describe such an interaction, because problem is here. The extrema of the potential doesn't reproduce the correct fixed point in two-dimensional normalization group.
Again, because I just, the difference is because
beta function for tachyon includes this term, this proportional to t. So then potential have a prefactor that looks like 1 plus t, right? And here, no prefactor. It's pure exponent.
And you identify that just by the dimension of it?
No, I can compute beta function for this one.
Why is it, I mean, if one is stupid, like I am, and you do the naive calculation, it looks like for the combination t plus k phi, you should get exactly the same answer that you had before.
No. You see, if you keep in mind that for constant, suppose constant tachyon field, t constant, z looks like e minus t, you agree, right? And then beta function looks like t plus correction, you agree. So to find potential, it looks like 1 minus beta d t z, right? And then it gives you 1 plus t times e in power minus t. And potential was this one, if you consider only the partition function. But due to this term, it now looks like this one, exactly what we need. Because the field phi is unnormalizable, it's dimensionless. Beta function for phi looks like zero. So, and then potential for phi looks like, no, this term, we have only this one, like z and look. So, it looks like this one. But it makes a problem.
From
now from the boundary.
On the boundary, it appears in the same way as t.
No, point that point that it's dimensionless.
Normalizing it differently. Of course, because phi comes from the bound.
No, here phi is on the boundary.
Well, the only way you can tell them apart somehow is if you include fluctuations in the metric or something, because otherwise k is just a constant.
A constant, right?
So,
but it's dimensional constant, right?
Well, it doesn't matter because k times y is...
No, for a normalization group it has matter because from the point of your normalization group, t is dimension full, but phi is dimensionless. So beta function for this looks like different. Here it's zero and here it's this term t.
How do you
know
the phi standard?
It's as simple as phi on the unit disk. Let me consider not unit disk, but with some radius. That I have angular variable and then radius, and radius is dimension. So if you consider this term, that dimension in this looks like a mass. While if you add term that chi phi, then dimension phi is dimensionless because k is proportional 1 over r.
Another way of saying it is when you define the beta functions, mm-hmm. you explicitly, when you do your beta position group transformation, you explicitly rescale k by saying because you say it's the dimension.
Mm-hmm. Of course, of course. As far as I'm doing kernelization group, of course.
But it's like, I mean, this is just a statement that the Boolean transformation has something E minus phi in form, right? I mean,
he's on the right
hand
tangent.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, but is there going to be a kinetic term for this field phi in this order? Because that goes with 1 E minus 2 phi, right? So you see it's the closed string kinetic term for the Dilaton.
No, no, of course, from...
But
from
a kinetic term, then it's just a modulus. It's not a dynamic.
No, no, no.
It's
just
about there's one of the
square kinetic
thermal
which is much
infinite. Yeah, so I'm saying that it has potential and concluding something from that only makes sense if indeed it's a dynamical field.
Right.
Which,
yeah,
well,
I guess it's dynamical at this point.
Yes. Moment, moment. A kinetic term you can include because as far as you have d, d, and d is the second derivative of phi. From this formula, you can derive action that looks like, suppose I forget about
that. The kinetic term for the zero problem comes from the from a cylinder.
Here it looks like this one. Mm-hmm. Yes, also. And here it comes from this, because D.
Directions to large 1 over g squared term become like 1 over g, but he's not being a large 1 over g squared term.
Right.
So, I could get to both, but there's another term.
Right. Yeah, so there's a renormalization of the kinetic operator.
Right. Okay.
So, I guess if you would do loop corrections in this theory, then in the channel you would have these large, then you definitely see some more infinite kinetic term, or infinitely smaller, or whatever. So, is this.
No, but here it's problem on the level of the potential, no kinetic term. Point how to bend the potential in this way. Because here in near the ultraviolet fixed point, we have the standard potential to
flag. I mean, you can't interpret the potential until you know what the kinetic terms are. I mean, I could do a field redefinition of phi and change the shape of the potential at the cost of changing what the kinetic term for phi looks
like. Change it to anything you like.
And change it to anything I want.
We're not running
with phi. Phi isn't meaningful until I know what the kinetic term for phi is.
I didn't expect this potential to extrema.
It's again from the normalization group. In two-dimensional normalization group for this we have here ultraviolet fixed point and here the infrared fixed point. Point that there's an equation that people like that looks like if we have effective action and then we take variation. Suppose with respect to phi, that it's related with some metric, the logic of metric, this beta function, to this coupling, a dimensional beta function phi. As far as beta function have two solutions, right, that it means that this should have at least two extremes. But problem here is that beta function has two solutions, but S potential has only one.
Doesn't just mean that your perturbation theory is breaking
up? It seems so. It's right because now I want to speculate about something like this. Then if we try to include higher order corrections, then it will be much better. Okay, so it's pure speculation. Next. And the main point. Let us consider perturbation theory not near the ultraviolet fixed point, but near the infrared fixed point. infrared fixed point in this settings means that the boundary conditions become the Dirichlet boundary condition. And so then if the suggestion by Polchansky's case too, it means that to the leading order, the partition function looks like this one, where n means the partition function on disk with Dirichlet boundary condition, and g tilde means the string coupling constant. That, assuming that the strong coupling constant and weak coupling constant relates like this one, and assuming that this is true, from this speculation, I found that potential now looks like this one, and indeed looks like it should be.
So this strong and weak coupling constant means that you have kind of S duality description for the unstable
version. No, I don't know.
Just from space time, don't we expect that it's e to the minus y at the top and zero at the bottom? So why don't you just get something that's zero at the infrared fixed point? The brain is gone, there's no tension, there's no dilaton source. Why do you see just from the space-time point of view, I mean, it seems clear that your e to the minus y was the tension of the brain, and the brain's gone, and where is your...
Okay, it seems that it's true that interpretation phi as a dilaton, it's a little problematic, because it's, from my point of view, it's better to interpret phi as some boundary field.
But we know that a D-brain has, there's a tachyon, and we know there's a Maxwell's gauge field, there aren't other scalars.
Mm-hmm.
Or, unless you're talking about a variety from translating. So phi has to be
introverted
to a closed ring field.
So phi is always off-shell, I mean.
Off-shell, no.
Always, I mean, it's not just have, so the Fick equation for phi should come on and have no solutions. It's always off-shell. There's no on-shell of the string state corresponding to that. So if the Fick equation cannot have a solution, which is already weird.
No, but here from formal calculations, a lot of difference between the partition function suppose for phi and for t, for the tachyon. It looks formal, and difference is only due to the beta function. Okay, it's only speculation. I don't claim that it's true. Okay, and now let me see what happens in the supersymmetric case. In supersymmetric case, the simplest case to study is D9 in type 2A. In this case, it's very simple to get some result about this just by supersymmetrizing the boundary interaction, and then it means that we should add psi fields and this one-dimensional supersymmetry to fix coefficient in front of this and this and this.
Minus one.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
No, it's from this, it's inverse. No, you can consider it as some kernel. It's kernel.
It is the
kernel.
Okay, so it's an
Wow,
And then, point that. In this case, boundary string field theory says at least that effective action coincides with the normalized partition function. If you look, in fact, the same computation as in the bosonic case, it's very simple to find that potential looks like this one. And so again, it has the right difference between its extremum at zero point and at infinity. Okay, and
the fact
this
that only works in the NS cycle means if I look at the like a one loop diagram for an open string, and I would look at the closed string channel, I would only see NS closed string states propagating.
I don't know a lot about loops. No. One that here it's all on the tree level. So what
well,
happens? What?
Action for the amount fields of the open string.
Mm-hmm. This relation is problematic because it's only was found in the Miller-Schwarz sector. What's going on in the Ramond sector is not clear.
The boundary string group theory only contains Miller-Schwarz sector fields in it because those are the only things you sort of know how to vary in the action.
Right, but so the one loop corrections to NS open fields contain also contributions from exchanges of error.
Of course,
so
of course.
Are they taken into account here, you think?
No, of course not. Of course not.
So you do one loop correction. If you would do a one loop correction,
I don't know how to do this. I'm not sure that someone knows a lot about this because it's open question. Because it's not clear how to do one loop correction in the Bozonian case. Okay, and point here that it's okay for Tachyon.
Why did you say that? I mean, why isn't it just changing from the disk to the annulus?
And the first point is that, you see, this background is not for Tachyon, is not conformal one, right? So it depends how we'll assign the boundary, background to the different boundaries, your answer. So it seems rather strange from this point of view.
So the answer, to your question, right? I mean, if you're going to do more than one circle, it's not clear how you interpret the resulting action.
So here I divided it up
with a functional value there on the circle.
Not
as a circle. But you could consider a hierarchy in the rerun surface with a single
discrete
boundary.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We can just have to integrate it for all the principle for all the metrics on the annular set.
Banishing fiddle, you work with a fixed closed string background and you write down the functional of the boundary values of the fields. Right?
So you just want to put higher genus.
You can put a higher genus surface and compute that functional.
Right.
And that would contain some of the quantum corrections that you're talking about.
And certainly it should contain remote field.
They're propagating in loops, but not, I mean, he's asking about the direct channel, which I don't see how
to do. If you want to write the space-time action for the field system on level 3 level computers from the desk, and then you compute the loops like in quantum.
Hopefully it should be the same thing, I mean,
you don't know.
As I said, the simplest problem to solve is how to write down the boundary interaction for the unknowest appearance. Okay, but for the disk, it seems that all is okay, and I mean the difference between this and this point is should be, and also the two extrema, this one, plus minus infinity. But let me see, as a we'll start. What happened if instead of this we will use this ansatz? Because it's rather natural say that if in bosonic case we have something like that and we have a beta function two dimensional in the supersymmetric case too, then effective action can have the same form as it has in the bosonic case. So an answer is that the only modification from this potential to a new one is this prefactor. And point that this prefactor make just a very little deformation. And my claim that this prefactor is irrelevant for Tachyon condensation phenomenon in the following sense, that you see difference between extrema here, it's again one, and at fixed point, because beta function disappeared. This answer and this reproduce the same distance relation between Gibbon tensions. So from this point of view, this ansatz is also okay.
But there's a big difference because at the unstable fixed point is tachyon's massless.
It's a little bit more tricky. If you want to find on-shell tachyon mass, you should include all the relative corrections because they contribute. It's a point. So it's here. It's around.
How can the higher derivative corrections affect the mass? You know, the mass is computed purely from the potential.
No. If you want to compute mass on-shell, you should. Get on shell, and so it means that there is mixing between derivative corrections in the sense that you should keep in mind that beta function for the tachyon looks like this one, and then there is interplay as far as here alpha prime between this and this term. So to find the correct mass in boundary strength field theory, you should include all pair of the derivative correction. But it's rather difficult to do, and I don't know how to do this. And in paper by Kutasov and others, it was claimed that much simpler to do not this computation, but to compute two-point function and then extract the correct mass from poles in two-point function. From boundary string theory point of view, it's difficult to know.
So because it's a massless
theory. Okay, and finally, I just mentioned two things, the most important problems here.
From that point of view, for any massive state, the effective potential really is pretty meaningless, right? Because you get corrections that when you go on shell, you get corrections from all higher derivative terms.
From this point of view, it's rather difficult to take on shell limit. Right.
Well, it's meaningless. Now, that's the traditional problem. That's just true in any field. You don't have to compute. There's computer effective action for massive states. We don't know what you mean. Having effective potential. Since p squared is m squared, how can you take out the p independent piece? The only time you can is if p squared is zero.
The higher derivative terms are suppressed by a scale that is not m squared, and so there's small corrections. But here the problem is that m squared and the cutoff are at the same place. That's the problem.
Okay, and what is it's not clear here how to compute loop corrections to the three-level potential, and then work out the Ramon sector for the supersymmetric case of boundary string field theory. And the next point is what boundary string theory can say about the tachyon vacuum. Because from this point of view, what is clear is that the tachyon vacuum looks like closed string perturbative operators and d-instantons. And it's not clear what to do with d-instantons. It's the main point. But point that here it's evident that there is no perturbative open string states as far as the boundary conditions become the Dirichlet boundary condition. So.
Questions we'll probably ask. So what is the description of people's volunteer?